jail for taking some baseball game tickets. So I don't have to worry that black people and Latino people won't pay for what Mr. Stone, he was caught in the thing with all the drugs just the other day. Oh, but he'll get some help. Up in Woodstock, all that stuff went on. Nobody mentioned it. There's no problem about, you know, black and Latino people getting what comes to them and what don't come belong to them.
I mean, I don't have to worry about that. Of racism in this country and the seriousness and how it affects institutions from educational to the incarceration institutions to all of them. I understand that it's very real and that it's important for us as people of color to be aware of those issues and to not forget about it and pretend like they're gone because people are, you know, making comments behind people's backs instead of to each other's face.
Let me ask you something.
But what I'm saying is that Mary Frances Berry, who is a black woman, she is a person that is a serious player in this whole thing. And as a young person of color who is an activist, who is a teacher and an educator, when I see other people that are supposedly standing up for our rights do things like this, it's a serious concern for me.
You say you're a young person, okay? Do you remember when Giuliani tore up, wanted to storm the city hall and whatnot? Do you remember when the 10th anniversary was the death of Yusuf? Did you see how those people carried on over there? Nobody said that they were hate, they were performing hate or anything. Are you serious? But now the march haven't even started.
Well, first of all, our caller is in California and doesn't necessarily know.
Well, I'm familiar with what Giuliani has done out to New York, and I'm not impressed.
She's making
with
a reference to the Million Youth March.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very well connected with some of the activists out there, and I am not at all in support of Giuliani or anything that he's done.
That's what they all say. I have yet to ask a white person anything that, you know, like they said. Oh, everybody I used to, oh, yes, I'm voting for Dinkins. And when Dinkins barely passed with the black and Latino vote, I expect that white people always say that.
Right. Carl, let me ask this question. Is it really, on the surface, what you say is a radical statement that basically all... Let me just finish my point. It's a question to you. On the surface, it's a radical statement. All, you know, all white people pretty much are...
I didn't say all.
Or most. Are racist and oppress black people, and especially when black people get into positions of power. However, is that really as radical a position when you're basically relying... You know, on the government, does a government representative of any race, you know, work for the interests of the people?
Let me tell you, by definition
of the government. As a matter of fact, in other words, what I'm saying is there's something that's even more worse than racist white people, and that's a racist government.
That's right. And you know one thing? I'd like to ask you a question. I know you're a reporter. What are the lengths of the terms of the... these city council people, I voted for term limitations. I'd like to see every black politician that's in office out. How about that?
Yeah, so we agree. We got a basis of agreement here. We have to work on it. I mean, we don't agree on everything, but I think there's something we can work with here. Okay, thank you very much, caller.
All right, thanks for calling.
I think there's definitely something we can work with.
Oh, yeah.
You're on the radio.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, hello. They went to get a sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
Missed your chance.
Missed your chance. And it's hard to get on. Believe me, every line is lit. And
people are still calling.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're on the radio.
Hi there.
Hello.
My name is KB. I'm one of the thousands who has been demonstrating and was camping in front of the KPFA radio station.
Oh, right on. Camp KPFA.
not just to take back KPFA.
Long live. Camp KPFA.
Hi, Khalil.
Hey, what's up?
But ultimately to democratize Pacifica, to reconstitute its bylaws so that this never happens again. Someone was earlier saying that maybe the reason broadcasters are playing softball with Dr. Berry is because lies of hers have not been, you know, conclusively proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, so they're a little hesitant there. I just wanted to provide a couple incontrovertible examples. One, let's see, a day or two after Dr. Berry, in emphatically denied to newspapers that there had been any discussions still in KPFA. A fellow board member, Pete Bramson, of the local advisory board, he blew the whistle that there had been discussions and proposals to sell KPFA, and that Dr. Berry was among the advocates of the proposal. So that goes beyond the Michael Palmer email.
Right,
that
right.
That simply lays it out a lie. One more example. I don't know if this was Dr. Berry specifically, but high-placed, maybe it was Chadwick, high-placed reps in Pacifica Foundation. They claimed repeatedly, both in public and in mediation, that they would not install the high-speed telephone line into the transmitter. And at the very same time, same days that they were making these promises, they were at the same time installing the line. So, I mean, those are just a couple. But time after time, you've got secret meetings, deceit, lies. I don't know how anyone can take her at face value anymore, or Lynn Chadwick, or any of them.
And are you in New York, or are you calling from California?
I'm calling from California, listening via the Internet.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Great. We're going,
this is our furthest
we're going
call
international.
So far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First call. Wow,
thanks a lot.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Thanks Bye-bye. For calling.
Great.
Thanks for the support.
Yeah.
You bet.
We even see the West Coast and East Coast connection going on here.
Right on.
I think that's
We'd
one of the
that.
Things that they didn't take into account was that the Internet and new media are allowing us to broaden our reach, you know, in ways that people couldn't predict.
Do you think that he was counted in the amount of people that listen to the
WBA? Arbitron.
The Arbitrons.
I think there's nothing better named than than Arbitron, you know,
arbitrary.
It's obviously a number that's picked out of a hat by commercial interests for commercial purposes. And I'll give you this. If they're so interested in Arbitrons, how come they won't kick in the $5,000 more that it costs to do the Arbitrons on the overnights? Because they might find that we have a higher audience than they like to say when they – certain folks disparage the overnights.
Every single phone line is lit up. Right
I know.
Now.
You know, and maybe they don't want to find out how many people listen overnight and how influential the overnights can be. But you're on the radio.
Hello?
Hi, all. It's Randy.
Randy.
Oh, Randy
great.
Steele.
Randy, I'm glad you got on. Randy Steele was the
MC
at the event last Thursday that Khalil spoke at.
Right
and
on.
She's been involved in BAI politics for 20-plus years and is a radio professional herself in very many areas of radio, commercial and non-commercial. And welcome
very
to our air, Randy.
Thank you very much, Paul. Unfortunately, it's obvious that Mary Frances Berry is a person with all of her other educational accolades, a person with a BS degree. I've been listening to her on this air, and I'll tell you, she
Did you
really,
hear it tonight, hon, when the callers called in?
Oh, yeah. She okay. really knows how to reach out with those ISDN lines and reach out and touch a lot of people. She really does a good job of making you think that she's in the studio, as opposed to wherever she's coming in on these ISDN lines. And that's a little deceptive in and of itself. I keep on hearing her making all of these statements of justifying what went on at KPFA as that Pacifica has to protect the license.
Right.
But I think that it's very important that we look at what happened from a legal standpoint when Mary Frances Berry and Lynn Chadwick and this guy from Texas were controlling KPFA's facilities for those couple of weeks. One of the broadcast towers had its lights go totally dark, which is a violation of FCC laws.
Randy's an expert on the FCC.
The FAA was not notified that, and that's not only a violation of many federal statutes, but also poses a direct threat to public safety.
Did anybody call in the FART?
Well, I think that's the hot air that's coming out of Mary Frances Berry, I guess. But also, one of the other things that was testified to at the California legislative hearing on Pacifica is that the KPFB repeater transmitter, which repeats KPFA for some of the Berkeley mountains, that transmitter was left totally blank when they replaced the lines, and no IDs, no nothing, and that's a clear violation of rules. And certainly the Pacifica Network going dark for about a week and a half and depriving all of the affiliate stations, and what happened in Central California with the other station in Fresno, which had contractual agreements, and its equipment was tampered with by these guards. All of these things have legal implications especially regarding the tower lights and the failure to perform the required notification of the FAA. These things point to a management that clearly is not of the technical knowledge necessary. I heard Mary Frances Berry one time describe KPFA as broadcasting with 59 million watts and WBAI as broadcasting with 51 million watts.
I think she's thinking dollars.
Yeah, how much they might be able to get for them, yeah.
Her cut.
And I'm wondering exactly the parachute, the golden parachute, which, if it's allowed, should only be a lead parachute for them. But it really points out that these people are, I think, in and of themselves, by their incompetence, a threat to the licenses. And I'm just wondering if there isn't any sort of emergency procedure that could be done by a combination of the local advisory boards or some other entity to protect Pacifica's license in order to get these people who are responsible for these technical violations, out on basic incompetency and malfeasance.
What do you think, Khalil?
I need to study the FCC stuff more, but I think that they're critical questions.
Let me just enter, because I just got a call off air from Robert Knight, who made a point that not only did she get the 51 million watts wrong, but she refers to Arbitrons and Audio Graphics, and the name of the company is Audi Graphics. Or she calls it Audi Graphics and it's Audio Graphics. She calls it Audi Graphics and it's really Audio Graphics, which Robert Knight said is another sign that she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Oh, well, she's a high government official. She doesn't.
There was another point, too, I wanted to make about that. She mentioned when Utrice Lead had her on her program on Tuesday in the afternoon, she said that Utrice asked her, Mary Frances Berry, what about hiring this public relations firm? And she goes, well, everybody has public relations. WBAI, I heard, has a public affairs person.
She had just met with the person who
which is funny because a public affairs person in radio is not a public relations. It's not a public relations person. It's head of the public relations department. And I couldn't believe that she didn't even know that.
I'd like to see anybody find out if she knows the standard hand cues in radio.
And the first time she was on in that canned interview thing that they have the news department a couple of weeks ago,
yes,
she also said outright, I don't know much about radio.
Yeah, well, somebody kind of stole my outline, my kicker, in that actually, of course, with all of this BS going on, the most pleasurable part of the interview was when it was over. But what made it more pleasurable was hearing Valerie squirm over the report to the listener question. That really was kind of the highlight of the
I didn't want to. I would discuss that earlier. Maybe you want to discuss that and take the burden off of me to have to discuss that.
Well, what happened at the end was somebody, it was mentioned that somebody very cleverly got through and asked why Valerie Van Isler, the general manager of WBAI, had not conducted a live report to the listener and a scheduled and maintained the schedule of report to the listeners, and got Mary Frances Berry to say that, well, that was very important and whatever. And you could just hear Mary Frances Berry running from one of the other rooms into the microphone to be very contrite and say, oh, well, you know, we do. It's like all of these people, they BS so well. It's just amazing. You have to learn a new level of reality of the art of the BS in order to understand that what these people say, that it really is like Alice in Wonderland, and that the opposite is always the case.
Very good point, Randy.
That's it. So get those other calls.
My question is, there's all these people asking really good questions and are very articulate and very much questioning some of the things, you know, that Mary Frances said and has done, but how come nobody was able to get through, or a lot of people were not able to get through? Was there any, like, how do they decide who got to speak or who got, how does that
well,
work?
Well, I know I was waiting and my phone was ringing for about 45 minutes of the half hour.
All I got was a busy signal.
Yeah. It was very busy tonight.
It was. They just, we only have 10 lines and
there's no screening process.
There's no screening process and there's millions, I mean, potentially, probably thousands and thousands of people who are listening who are
right.
attracted to this. I think there's no way, especially in a market as big as the New York market, and I think that belies when they say the arbitrage that we only have 179,000 listeners. Oh, what a pile of BS. We have, depending on the issue and what's happening in people's interest,
remember
to the specific program, a huge number of listeners. Believe me, if tomorrow World War III were to break out, we'd have 20 million listeners.
That's right.
And
where do you think they'd go?
And
just because they don't, you know, they totally, when they talk about the absolute numbers, it's so disingenuous because they're totally leaving out, and I know why they're leaving it out, they're leaving out the influence that WBAI has on protest culture. And that is because
right.
these people are coming to take away our protest outlet.
In order to
protest
privatize.
Information.
That's right, because where else are we going to organize? Where else are we going to announce where the protests are? What time?
Oh, we can all gather on the steps of City Hall. It's all part of the same mentality.
That's right.
Right, where the mayor was keeping people off of the steps of City Hall.
Exactly.
And not even allowing them on the steps of City Hall where they'd been going for years to make speeches. All of a sudden they were banned and prevented from being able to use that backdrop for their positions.
Well, it's very important also to note about the Arbitrons is that they were originally established for salespeople in commercials to be able to take those to advertisers to be able to charge them their costs per thousands. And even people in the commercial industry agree that they're just a benchmark in order to charge cost per thousand rather than any kind of an actual scientific rating of how many people are listening to the car or on their or in their Walkmans or anything else.
Pat Scott, you know, a lot of people tell one person who knows, who deals with these people, who's a business person, who deals with here at WBAI and deals with these people for years and has over the years, said he actually liked Pat Scott, even though he considered her "quote unquote" evil. She was the former, before Lynn Chadwick, head of Pacifica, the CEO sort of, as opposed to the board head, which is Mary Frances Berry. And she had would call up. He actually considered her open. He could call her up and get information that he needed to run the station, which you can't really get from Lynn Chadwick. And she would actually talk and be nice and sweet, but she would always say and be very open about her position. She would say, "We have to get the hippie shit off the air."
Yeah.
She would use those words. "We have to get this hippie shit off the air." And, you know, this guy would tell me that, well, he considered her evil, but at least she was honest about it. The problem with Mary Frances Berry is she's just as evil but dishonest about it.
Yeah, lie in your face, a backstabber.
And that the question really is they want to get rid of the hippie shit, quote unquote, which is, of course, the political protest.
Right.
Stop.
Anything that's really anti-government, and it's very important, and it did get out on the air tonight. One of the local people from the Save Our Station group actually got one of the best questions out on the air. His name is John, and kudos to him about asking about the conflict of interest for Pacifica, a group of stations that has its root in anti-war and to a certain extent anti-government organizing, to have someone as its chairperson, someone who's very high up in the federal administration. And she blew that off, of course, by saying, "Oh, well, I've been an activist all my life, blah, blah, blah." But, you know, what you say is true about that she kind of promotes this kind of feel-good about your federal government is here to protect you. And meanwhile,
I've read her book. I'm about halfway through it.
Yep.
Her book, The Pig Farmer's Daughter,
which we got from the library.
All these feel good anecdotes about how the justice system works for black people. So I don't see people call for diversity. Well, she represents diversity of bourgeois liberal crappy political views that I hate.
It's great for people who like to sit in the back of the limousine.
Probably connected with Ward Connolly out here, who helped Affirmative Action get taken away.
Right,
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And pull yourself up by your Bruce steps.
And this is just another step, and all of this talking out of both sides of your mouth is just another step in order to take away more rights and more power from the people.
That's right.
Hello.
All right, well, I'm going to let you go and get more calls.
All right, thanks for calling, Randy.
Okay, take care, all.
Bye-bye.
Good luck.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Randy. And we got a whole board full of calls
every
here.
Every single line.
This is Let Them Talk. I'm Paul D'Arienzo, Miss Joan Marie Moosey. Our guest is Khalil Jacob Fantuzzi, who's on the local advisory board of KPFA. He was arrested hogtied and taken away and thrown in jail and still faces charges because he wanted to keep his radio station that he is on the board of open.
And I'm still alive and fighting here with y'all.
That's great. Right.
And every single line, phone line is lit up. And people are calling me offline and on the other phone, and I can't keep track of it all. It's driving me nuts. This is great. I love it. This
keep
is what
calling.
Radio is all about. Keep on calling. You're on the radio.
Hello?
Oh, hallelujah.
All right.
Hi, this is Abby.
Hey, Abby.
And it's a wonderful show.
Oh,
and I feel
you.
So guilty, like the true Jew I am, that I missed the demonstration last week. And I missed a brother from California who not only is articulate, but is an inspiration in terms of showing the kind of spine. And I use the term spine because men often like to refer to other parts of their anatomy to show that they are determined and strong. But I think it is a genderless thing, and it is a spine is something that women and men can both show.
Backbone. Backbone.
That's right.
Backbone, spine.
Well, I appreciate that, and I give thanks to my mom.
Well, right on.
My mom who raised me, the
right
single
on,
mother
brother.
Who raised me right.
What well, did
right
she think
on,
when
brother.
She saw, what
well,
did she think when she saw your
second,
picture
Paul.
Being, oh,
Paul.
I'm sorry, well, no, go ahead, I was just going to ask
Paul,
a question.
Paul, enough, right. Paul. Right. We love you, Paul, but enough. there are a few things I really have to say. And I have to say it in the context of our local situation, Khalil. Because I like to think of myself as a premature anti-fascist. In other words, that was the term they used for people who were against the fascists before it was fashionable. And I was very active in this struggle 3.5 years ago, before it was fashionable. And at that time, there were people on the West Coast who were in the vanguard of this struggle, who were being isolated as loose cannons and chicken littles, you know, and nobody believed them, like Jeff Blankford, 3.5 years ago, 4 years ago, a man who has, you know, given his life to this struggle, you know, made many personal sacrifices. And what happens in this struggle is people get characterized and people get maligned because sometimes people aren't ready to take the risks that have to be taken in struggle. And I'm not talking about giving your life. Sometimes I'm talking about risking your job because when your job is linked to deception, which is what some producers at BAI have been actively participating in. So the caller who called earlier tonight is right on the money in his questions. I thought I was so excited to hear him in the beginning of the show because I felt it opened up, you know, exactly where the focus needs to start happening in New York. And that is, you know, Bernard White is a wonderful man. He's a cuddly teddy bear when you meet him. He's got a wonderful radio voice. You know, he's all these wonderful things. But in addition to all these wonderful things, he has consistently played a role in New York of deception, of a deception that has deflected focus away from the struggle at hand. And the thing that is so pernicious about this deception is that he has such great leftist black activist credentials, and that one of the things that has flourished in New York at WBAI is our own leftist version of the race card. Namely, if you criticize a person of color at BAI, you are a racist. For years, I was a producer at BAI, and like 10 years ago, there was a lousy engineer who was a black man. And if you criticized his work, which was very criticizable because he made many mistakes and was lazy and screwed up all the time, he'd accuse you of being a racist. And this was a very popular, and to this day, it is a very popular modus operandi at the station, and unfortunately, many of the white leftists at the station pander to this culture.
Well, okay.
Now, wait, Abby, that's a good point. You know, because you could, you know.
No, no, Abby, you know, we gave you a chance to say
this. No,
wait,
but I'm not finished because I just want to make a few other points, Paul.
Well, we don't
this
have that much time.
This is not a personal attack. I don't even mind
if it's a personal attack.
I knew you would do this.
Just that we have every single line lit
every
up.
Line lit up.
Come on, you let other people go on and on. Let me just
Well,
make,
we're going to go in the direction of just like.
Let me make two points, two more points.
Okay, quickly,
Khalil, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
I would just simply like to ask you, one of the things in New York that has happened that I think is really incredible is that what most listeners don't know is that training for community activists to learn the art of radio has ceased, and practically, for all intents and purposes, it has ceased in New York for the last 4 years. Now, I want to know, in California, is that true?
We have a program called the Apprenticeship Program that's an affirmative action program that's dedicated to getting women, people of color, and activists on the air. And we're the only station in the network that has this.
Okay, but that is not the case in New York.
Our program was not able to graduate. The Apprenticeship Program was not able to graduate in the station as a result of the lockout.
Okay, but that is not the case in New York, Khalil. You need to know that.
I'm saying it's the only one in the network.
Right.
The entire network of
Pacifica is the only one. BAI used to train a lot more community people. That does not happen anymore, and the people in the community need to demand that again.
Now, the question was put to Bernard, actually, by a caller tonight on the Mary Frances Berry show, and he said, well, and it's true, I've seen it, there's a lot of on-the-job training. I mean, people come in, and rather than going through a formal training process, we have a different system in New York. And it's just a different one. And
where
people come in and they get on the air training. They go right on the air and they learn on the air.
No, but does that
on
still
the
happen
ONJ,
much?
What? On the job, OTJ training. We do it differently.
Does that still happen as much as it used to?
Well, I think part of it, I have to say that, you know, and I know that people are angry about some decisions that Samori made, and he was in a difficult position and probably made some decisions that were wrong or pissed people off. I'm not going to say that. However, I'm going to say his overall perspective was to diversify the station.
No, define diversify.
Well, to allow other people I think who are really good programmers and people to have an opportunity to get involved in the station.
But
I think,
does that have to do with training?
You know, I can mention names, but, you know.
But I think that the point of the caller is very clear to me, that that we have Mary Frances Berry, who's talking about the issue of the lack of diversity, going on the air and saying we want to expand the listenership, we want to expand this station, this community station, to be a voice of the people. And I think that the apprenticeship program that we have in Berkeley that people have been fighting for, that is something that is dedicated. Of course, there is the informal on-the-job training that happens at our station as well, at all stations that happens.
Right.
But that there's an actual program guarantees, regardless of who's in charge of the station or who has which program, guarantees and is dedicated to that issue of diversity, to the issue of including the community's voice, including young people's voice, including the activist's voice.
Right.
And
but
if you
don't have that,
if the individuals change,
then
you don't have it no more. So that's why that's something, if she's talking about diversifying the network, that's something that should be at every station, from Texas to L.A. to New York to D.C. to California.
You know, it's funny. The thrust of what you're saying I agree with, and the heart that you're describing with I agree with. I think there's room, and I think this is part of the discussion that should be going on. There's room to discuss because there's ways of doing it. See, in my opinion, the way we should do things in New York is to expand our on-the-job training programs and bring people right in to work here and to come through and not necessarily have a formal training system. I don't know if that would be the right thing to do in New York.
Well, I'm not against bringing people in. I think that both have to happen. I don't see it as a do or do not, or one or the other. There's definitely some style questions.
Well, can I just say one more thing? There's one more thing I want to say, which is I lived in the Bay Area for 5 years, and I listened to KPFA a lot, and I moved back in 93. And one of the things that is glaringly evident is that there is much more feminist programming out in the Bay Area than there has been in the last 12 years, 14 years in New York. And as much as you will laud Samori, Paul, for everything he did, and I'm not taking away from all the good things that, you know, Samori has done vis-a-vis his community. However, vis-a-vis feminist programming at BAI, you know, not just Samori, but many factors at the station, there was a you know, that book that Faludi wrote, what was it called? The big book on the backlash against feminism. Well, there was a tidal wave of backlash against feminism at BAI, and there was a lot of maligning, and women would call up and say, what is going on at this station? There is no, and then what happened was there was like a bolstering of the split between black women and white women, and black women wanting to call themselves womanist, not feminist. And which is, you know, to have that discussion is fine. But when feminist programming was presented at the program councils that Samori basically ran and controlled, his response to that issue was, I don't want balkanization of the airwaves. And yet the reality of his leadership is that there was more black nationalist programming that was developed and maintained to this day on this station, and no women's programming except health-oriented women, you know, endometriosis, breast cancer, blah de blah, but not women organized, you know, there was just a whole vast world. And so that was rejected, and people who promoted it were isolated. And the last point I'm going to make is that one of the problems that listeners must acknowledge is that it is the listeners. You know, if the people lead, the leaders will follow. The lesson that must be learned out from California is that while there were people who were struggling 4 years ago, this only took off to the degree it did this year because the listeners galvanized and pushed the programmers to find their spines. And right now at BAI, unfortunately, even though people don't get paid for their jobs, there is a sexiness to being on the air. And there are times that there is a culture at BAI.
And I get your point, and there's so many calls, we're running out of time.
People will sell their own mother for another 15 minutes of air time.
Okay, thank you.
And the callers.
I have to go because we want to go and get some of the other people in.
And push the programmers to find their.
I think that the caller makes a really good point.
Yeah. Authority.
That the reality out here in the Bay Area is that it was community activists and communities and the listeners that got together, that came up with a strategy, along with some of the programmers that were on top of it. And that's it's really about people power.
Right. Well, it was just inspirational to us.
Yes.